Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Who took the bomb?
Welcome to this bonus episode of Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot. And we recently aired an interview with guitarist, singer, and songwriter Richard Thompson of Fairport Convention, of a long solo career, of a great period of albums with him and Linda, his wife at the time. We wanted to share even more of that interview since we had so much fun talking to Richard. And there were some great bits left on the cutting room floor.
After a short break, we'll hear about a strange encounter with country artist Buck Owens, his religious identity, and a Led Zeppelin jam session.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. Every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island, so we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, lemonade, shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
All right, let's hear more of our interview with Richard Thompson.
Why don't we start at the beginning? I just fell in love. I was laughing and also kind of a tear in my eye about your first guitars. You were eager to get your hand on one of these instruments, and you kept getting these toy cowboy tin guitars early on that you would instantly destroy.
Well, I think that they were built to be destroyed, basically. They were literally toys that my parents would continue to fob me off with, thinking I wasn't really serious. But I was serious. I was absolutely serious. Finally, a guitar turned up in the house when I was about 10 years old that I think my father thought he was going to play. And then my sister thought she was going to play it. But I knew it was my destiny to get my hands on that guitar. So I did. I commandeered it. And that set me off on the road.
I love that it was your dad had gotten it. It had broken in shipment from Spain, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but he was a woodworker as well as being a constable, and he managed to put it back together. I love that.
He did, yeah. Well, he apprenticed as a, what's called in England a joiner, which is really a house carpenter, I suppose. And then, you know, at the age of 18, he thought, well, I'm getting out of this provincial Scottish town. I'm going down to the big smoke. I'm going down to London and seek my fortune, as many have before me. And he joined the London police and was there for decades.
You must not have been telling people that your dad was a cop in the height of the psychedelic 60s. Or were you?
Well, we were very cheek by jowl geographically. One of the main clubs in London was this club called Middle Earth, which was right set in the fruit and vegetable market of London. It was the main fruit and veg place where, you know, the various fruit and vegetable outlets would come at 4 a.m. and buy their produce. And my father was stationed right next to the market at that time. He was at what was then Bow Street Police Station. And, he was in plain clothes. He was, a plain clothes policeman. And somehow we never bumped into each other at that time, you know, because we were playing all hours of the night at this club, you know, and the market workers were there, you know, and it was a very strange mixture of people. Plus, you had the Opera House around the corner.
Wow.
So people would come out of the Opera House at 11, 12 o'clock at night, and they'd be kind of mingling with this, with everybody. It was one of the most bizarre mixings of people you could imagine.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I love is you write early on when you were discovering those 78s that your dad had collected and beginning to listen to music. I just love, so many musicians we interview never want to talk about being critical. They love everything. We're two critics. You know, we spend our life being critical. We like to think about the art that we love. You said early on there was a voice in your head that you could separate. You know, it wasn't all just the magic of whatever you were putting on the phonograph, the 78. You know, there were ones you liked and ones you didn't.
And I don't know why that is. What instinct did I have? I don't understand, really. You know, why did I like Big Spiderbeck and not like, you know, Pearl Carr and Teddy Johnson, you know, two, you know, very schmaltzy singers from the 50s, you know, very popular in Britain at the time. What was it? How did I know what the difference was? But somehow I did. Louis Armstrong Hot Fives. I mean, crikey, you know, this was incredible stuff to have in your house at the age of, you know, from zero, really. I mean, it's always there. My father also came back from the war with these great French records by, you know, Edith Piaf, Charles Trenet. It's fabulous, popular music that I think French music almost got destroyed by rock and roll. French music before the war was so rich, just wonderful songwriting. So that was just wonderful, enriching stuff. It almost just happened to me without me thinking about it. Mm-hmm. But somehow I knew how to discriminate.
Also tell a great story. There's a lot of humor in the book. The Buck Owens story just flabbergasted me.
Yeah.
What happened there?
Well, airports, you know, airports are the places where you run into musicians or you run into people you know. It's as if you might live next door to a musician and you'll never see them because either you're working or they're working. So you just don't see them around, but you'll meet them in Dallas Airport, you know, or Chicago Airport. Yeah, you know, you'll meet them in an airport hub. And we were sitting in the coffee shop in Detroit, and having breakfast before our flight, and we're being insulted from the next booth, you know, like hippies kind of stuff, you know,
long hairs,
girlies, you know, look at them, girlies. The booths were high, so you had to kind of lean around to have a look. And there's these guys, dressed in basically the same clothes. They're in a kind of uniform, and they've got cowboy hats on. And it's Buck Owens. I mean, you know, I had his records at home.
Yeah.
You know, so it's Buck Owens and the Buckaroos. and they're insulting us. It was extraordinary. You know, I mean, how bizarre is that? And anyway, you have to read the book to get the end of the story. But
that's fair enough.
Well, it's kind of like that scene in Easy Rider where they pull into the town and all the townsfolk are kind of ganging up on them, insulting them for the way they look, and clearly they don't belong there. And what are you doing in our? So it's interesting you had that kind of reception, you know, it's like from one of your music.
But you know, that was a surprise to us because. We weren't expecting hostility in America, but it was definitely there just from the way that we looked. And we didn't probably realize, you know, that there was such a generational gap in America and how politicized that was. Mm-hmm. That just came as a shock to us.
Yeah.
So many wonderful portraits of fellow travelers like the Pink Floyd and Nick Drake, you know, that you interacted with over the years. But I'd be completely remiss if I didn't ask you about this jam session with Led Zeppelin that you wish you had. I mean, the tapes were rolling. Where did the tapes go?
Yeah. Well, we were recording the whole week at the L.A. Troubadour. On the Wally Hyder mobile, which is sitting out in the parking lot, you know, one night Zeppelin turned up. You know, they had a night off, so they came down to see their friend Dave Pegg, who was also from Birmingham in England. And you know, one by one, they get up on stage. You know, I think Jimmy Page got up first, so then Robert got up and sang a few things, and then Bonham got up and destroyed Dave's drum kit. No surprise there. And it was, it was just wild, you know. I think at some point we were all on stage, you know, everybody's on stage. And then after that, I didn't put it in the book, but then there was this kind of all-night drinking place that the police then raided. So everyone was like hiding under pool tables and sort of hiding, you know, it was almost like cartoon, like where you put a lampshade on your head and they can't see you, you know. It's kind of
I don't know if Bonham would have been so easily hidden.
Well, you know, yeah, anyway.
You mentioned feeling alien on those early tours in America. You've now lived here for 30 years, right?
Yeah, I still feel alien. You
know, I know. But you also write, Richard, the way I count it, you're an alien twice over. So associated with the British music scene, living in America, though, for decades. And a person of the Muslim faith. And you write about discovering this. You say it saved your life. You know, it stopped you from drinking. It gave you, you know, a core to continue. And, you know, we have this prejudice in America, you know, of, as you said, you don't do anything different than a quarter of the people on earth do every day, you know, praying to Mecca and praying, you know, following the routines. But I wonder how you cope in America as someone who, you know, I guess all of us who are creative in any way feel like we don't fit in America sometimes these days. But it's got to be particularly hard for you.
I suppose so. I could be very positive and say, You have more freedom, religious freedom, in America or in a lot of European countries than you do in just about any Middle Eastern country. Your ability to practice your faith is very narrow. Yeah. So certainly, there are Muslim countries where if you're a Christian, there's prejudice against you. It shouldn't be like that.
Right.
That should not be the case. Islam teaches you to honor Christians and the Jews. No question about that. So is it hard? Well, you know, I probably don't advertise it too much.
Mm-hmm.
I probably keep myself to myself. And if people ask me, if people really question me, then I'd say people don't know how close Christianity and Judaism and Islam are to each other. So it's all very close. And at the end of the day, you know, there's one God. So someone said that water takes on the color of the glass that you pour it into. So it's the same water. Yeah, you pour it into this yellow glass, it's yellow. You pour it into green glass, it's green. Mm. It's still water. Same water when you drink it.
Right.
It tastes the same.
That's it for this bonus episode of Sound Opinions. If you've got thoughts on this episode, start a conversation in our Facebook group or leave us a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org. We are airing more of them all the time. To support the show, join our Patreon community or buy some merch at soundopinions.org. I'd really like to get it out of the closet, Mr. Cott. I don't know how you stuck me with all the merch. As always, Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our intern, Sol Delgadillo, while we get some significant social media help from Katie Cott. Thanks for listening.